Hello again, once again, everybody. Welcome to the Monterey Podcast. Jamie Davis here. This is episode number 52 for December 8th, 2019. And we inch closer to the end of the year. Just a couple of programming notes. Last two episodes of the year will be pre-recorded shows. I do have a omnibus special on impeachment, since that's been a big topic as of late. So I'm going to put all of my three-part impeachment specials into one easy-to-fit episode. And because those episodes all had different things that we talked about on the show besides those things. So what I did was I just compiled just the impeachment parts into one episode. So be on the lookout for that. That'll probably be out on December 22nd because I will be traveling for the holidays. And joining me, of course, as he is every week, is my dad. How's it going, Dad?
Everything's going good.
How's the weather?
It's a lot better. Most of the snow has melted because of the rain.
And I do want to apologize again for last week, just because, you know, I know that you had internet challenges, and that probably had to do with, even though you had power, there was a lot of power outages up there, and that probably was affecting, you know, all the internet, you know, stuff that they have up there.
Well, I talked to a friend, I ran into her in the market in Crestline, and she was without power for 6 days.
Wow.
And also didn't have cell service.
Oh.
It got to be tough, yeah.
So you're basically completely... Now, did she have a generator?
I don't think so.
Oh, no. Yeah.
No, I would have been gone somewhere.
Yeah, you just leave until you find out it comes back on. Pack up the cats and take off, yeah.
I mean, if you had cell service, it'd be one thing. Without cell service and power...
But if you don't have power, then your cell phone is eventually going to die. So
yeah,
it only does you so good, yeah.
Yeah, you can't charge it up.
Yeah. So we have a lot to get to on the show today. A lot of different stories that came out this week. We're going to talk a little bit about the impeachment later on. But first, and this is the surprising thing, is this is a story out of CNN. Headline is George Nader, key Mueller witness charged with funneling contributions to Clinton campaign. So George Nader, who has for decades hobnobbed with political elites and became a key Mueller cooperator, and Allied Wallet CEO Ahmad Andy Khawaja are accused of sending millions to political campaign committees and hiding Nader as its source, with Nader allegedly reporting to a Middle Eastern government on the effort. According to the Federal Election Commission records and details in the indictment, the money primarily went toward backing Clinton's 2016 campaign efforts. Though Clinton and her affiliated campaign finance groups are unnamed in the indictment, the money primarily went to her campaign, according to a source familiar with the investigation and campaign finance records. Attorneys for the Clinton campaign, the Democratic Party, Bill and Hillary Clinton, did not respond to request for comment this week. At one point, Khawaja hosted a Clinton campaign fundraiser at his home featuring Bill Clinton, because Khawaja had contributed almost $1 million in contributions to the campaign. He hosted other political events too, according to the indictment. And through his company, Khawaja donated $1 million to the Donald Trump inaugural committee, securing inauguration tickets for himself, Nader, and another co-conspirator, the indictment said. The newly unsealed indictment adds to a collection of cases the Justice Department has brought cracking down on foreign political contributions and influence in the wake of the Robert Mueller special investigation. In other pending criminal cases, prosecutors have alleged illegal contributions that went to many types of candidates and political interests, especially Republicans, and have sketched out efforts from several governments, especially Russia, to tap into American politics. So what did Nader have to do with the Mueller investigation? Well, in the Mueller investigation, Nader had become a key cooperator and had given extensive information about his contact with a Russian and the Trump campaign. The special counsel's office investigators had asked questions about Nader's political networking, some of which touched on the new set of allegations, according to a source familiar with the investigation. Mueller's interest in Nader appeared to focus on his close relationships with the United Arab Emirates, a Russian businessman, and people close to Trump, and how he became a connector between the rich and powerful Russian Kirill Dmitriev and the Trump associates. Nader was a key witness for Mueller as the special counsel pieced together a scaleless meeting in early 2017 between Trump supporter Eric Prince and the prominent Russian government-backed banker Dmitriev, who has close ties to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Nader informed Prince that the Russians were looking to build a link with the upcoming Trump administration, Mueller wrote about their interaction shortly after the 2016 election. So it sounds like this case is more of a, they're just trying to buy influence with whoever's going to be in power. So they thought that, just like everyone else we talked about, thought that Hillary was going to win. They put money towards Hillary. Once Trump won, they switched their efforts to Trump. And that's basically what it sounds like to me, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
You know, and this is just another example, like they were saying, of how much interference is going on in our country, in our elections. It's not just, you know, foreign people are trying to make inroads, but we have people within our country trying to help them. And that's where I think it's going to be really, really tough. You know, those, and they're getting more sophisticated about it. And usually you don't find out about these things until the election's already over. So as long as they get what they want and they face the consequences later, what's the difference? You know, that's what's so scary about this kind of thing. So I don't know. I don't know what you do about it. I don't know how you really combat it on a proactive basis.
There's probably a lot we don't even know, too.
Exactly.
As far as that goes, as far as all these other countries goes, China, they could have done a lot, we find out 5 years from now.
Or even North Korea.
You know, North Korea, you know. It's with the age of internet nowadays and the way they can manipulate things, it's nothing surprises me. But and it's not, I don't believe it's one side either.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's, again,
they're just trying to get favor who's ever in power.
Exactly, right. Moving on to the next story, there is a watchdog report expected tomorrow. That we're not going to spend too much time on this. I don't actually have an article on it, but this has been a highly anticipated report. So Bill Barr had assigned a watchdog, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, to do an investigation into how, remember Trump wanted a look into how the Russian witch hunt started, right? And the report is due out tomorrow, and we will find out exactly what was on the report. But from the initial reports that I'm reading, people that have seen it, they're saying that the report will find that the investigation itself was legitimate, but there were mistakes made along the way. You know, and whether those are, you know, criminal in nature, or they are just kind of administrative in nature, like they didn't cross all their, you know, T's and dot all their I's type of thing, we'll find that out later on. But for now, it appears that that there's not going to be a lot coming out of this. And so that becomes the question again, you know, if it was a legitimate look into it and nothing came about it, could that be a road for Trump to take one day, that, hey, I'm looking into Joe Biden, and if there's something there, we'll take care of it. If there's not, then there's nothing there. I mean, that could very well be a possibility, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just we'll see. We'll probably talk about that more next week once the report comes out and we have a chance to take a look at it. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, on Friday put a temporary hold on House subpoenas requesting President Donald Trump's financial documents from two banks. In a brief order, Ginsburg said a lower court opinion that allowed the subpoenas to proceed would go on hold until Friday, December 13th. That's this Friday. In all, three separate cases pertaining to Trump's financial records, two of which concern House subpoenas, are before the justices. Ginsburg's order signals that all of the petitions could be considered by the court December 13th during its regularly scheduled closed-doors conference. No documents are expected to be released until the Supreme Court acts. The latest case concerns subpoenas that the House Intelligence and Financial Services Committees issued to Deutsche Bank and Capital One, asking for a variety of documents from the president, members of his family, the Trump Organization, and several affiliated entities. Trump's lawyers are seeking to block the subpoenas from going forward to give the president time to formally ask the justices to take up his appeal. In the latest petition, lawyers for Trump argue that the Supreme Court should treat him differently from ordinary plaintiffs and agree to the emergency petition because he is entitled to the, quote, high degree of respect due the President of the United States, end of quote. They argue that in issuing the subpoenas, Congress exceeded its legislative authority by improperly engaging in law enforcement. These dragnet subpoenas, the lawyers argued, look nothing like a legislative inquiry. Now, the justices in the appeals court said, unquestionably, disclosure of the financial records sought by the committees will subject Trump's private business affairs to the committee's scrutiny. However, inquiry into private affairs is not always beyond the investigative powers of Congress. Now, if the connection would be that, hey, he's using the office to enrich himself, the only way you'd be able to find proof of that would be in his private financial records, right? In terms of the emoluments clause in the Constitution.
Yeah.
So do you think that, you know, because remember, that was always a big thing, like, you know, during the campaign, when is he going to release his tax returns? And he said, okay, after I win the election, then I'll release the tax returns. Obviously, he still hasn't done that. Do you think that they should be, I mean, I guess he doesn't have a legal obligation, at least at this point, to release them per se. Obviously, the Congress is trying to get a hold of some records. But do you think that just from that standpoint, he should release them just to remove all doubt? Or what do you think about that?
He probably should. He won't. He's going to fight it tooth and nail, whether there's anything in there or not. It seems like, you know, like it's his opinion that his records are private. That's what I think. He thinks he's just not going to do it. And that's what you do. You fight it and you go to court and then the court decides.
Yeah. I mean, I think that obviously he's going to have a tougher...
Kind of like with Biden. You know, he's fighting his records.
Yeah.
Hunter Biden. And he has the right to do that, but...
Well, Hunter Biden, though, isn't... Kind of, Hunter Biden isn't ranked for...
Yeah, he's not the president.
Well, and he's not running for president either. I mean, that would be like asking, no. Well, we need to see Donald Trump Jr.'s financial records.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, his tax returns, just like we want to see Trump's, you know. But, you know, here's the thing is that if they're, you know, assuming that the impeachment reaches the Senate, they could very well subpoena Hunter Biden's financial records.
Yeah.
You know?
I heard something. He's going through he has a little legitimate kid, and they want, what's it called for child?
Oh, child support. Yeah.
And he's saying he's broke.
Right.
And then they always seem to do that, you know, in all cases. Like, I don't have the money. So they wanted his records to see if he does have the money.
Well, and that's pretty typical.
So it's like, that's kind of our personal stuff.
Well, and that actually is that is typical in child support cases. You know, they will force, because a lot of times, like you said, that the parent that's fighting it will say, "Hey, I don't have the money." It's like, well, we need to see that. Then we need to have that proved.
Yeah, or even divorce when they're looking for alimony and stuff.
Yeah,
oh, that's I'm broke. Right. I don't have no money.
Yeah,
and so it's. But like I say, his financial records is from the last 3 years or from last 10 years.
I'm not sure exactly how long. I don't know how long the it goes back. I would imagine that. Well,
I think it would go back more than 3 years since he's been president. That's what they've been wanting.
Well, it is, and I think it has to do with, okay, so if he has financial ties to foreign governments, and that would explain why he takes certain actions as a result. You know, that could be, yeah. Hey, you know, these guys help me out, or I have business interests. And, you know, yeah. Like, for example, you know, the whole thing with Turkey and the Kurds. Why are we, you know, treating Turkey so differently? Well, it turns out he has a couple of Trump towers in Istanbul. you know, those kind of things. I think that's the ties they're looking for.
It's the same thing with anybody, even candidates that are running. They want Elizabeth Warren's taxes. She released her taxes, but not while she's been in government. When she was in private, mm-hmm. she's not releasing any of those. Why they want them, I don't know, but she won't release anything beyond when she was in, you know, in government.
Well, and she's been in government for a while, right?
And I think it's just, you know, it's all obviously political. Before, she has been, but before she was in government, she was a professor and stuff like that. And they want to know, because she's talking about people paying their fair share, and they want to know if she paid her fair share, just to rank on her. That's right. What the purpose of it is, I think.
Well, I mean, your fair share is to me, your fair share is whatever you're obligated to pay under the law at the time.
Legally, yeah.
You know, even the most...
And I was talking to I went on a ride-along. Well, not a ride. Anyway, I don't know if I should talk about when I patrol, but I was with a guy, and he knows a lot about Gates mm-hmm. and all the stuff that Gates does. And he does a lot for a lot of people, and he does... He's done this stuff where he's where you can burn nuclear fuel, so you have to, you know, for power and stuff like that, so you don't have to worry about dumping, you know. Sounds like fascinating and stuff, and that's what he gets involved in. And when they rank on the rich billionaires and stuff like that, they don't realize how much like people they employ, all the taxes they pay, and all the stuff all the money he's given,
all the philanthropy,
and he's done just. Yeah, and he does a lot, which, you know, at least from this guy was telling me, is like, I was pretty surprised about all the stuff he does that people don't really know about, and helping, like, Africa and stuff like that. But also, like you said, there would be a perfectly, he says, you can burn nuclear fuel for power. So, you know, the excess fuel that, you know, rather than dumping it, what they worry about. And it sounds, you know, he has a plant that all the sewage thing, and he turned on tap water and drinking stuff and saw the stuff that was purified by. He works on stuff like that. He's like, tries to be a problem solver.
Right. Yeah.
And he's always thinking, and his wife drives his wife crazy because that's how he is. He's just always thinking, you know what I mean? When you got a mind like that.
Well, and when they go, about, I think, like 90% of his wealth or something is going to charity. Various charities. Yeah. So he gives while he's alive, and then when he dies, almost all of it's going to go to worthy causes. And like you said, if you start taxing that stuff, it erodes away at the wealth that he's accumulated, and won't have that stuff won't be available as much to then the charities. You know, I think what you you should incentivize charitable giving. You know, maybe make that more worthwhile. For wealthy people.
That's what they're... Well, that's the difference between, I think, Democrats and Republicans. Republicans give more and stuff to charities and stuff, and the Democrats seem to think that, you know, they don't need to because the government should do that.
Right.
And in my opinion, like, if I were to hit the lotto mm-hmm. and I got $500 million,
yeah,
I wouldn't want to give it to the government, all this taxes, like the rich people do. I would want to give it to charities that I think is worthy.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Rather than, because I think if you just give it to the government and let them do it, it's just a waste. And like I said, I would obviously give a lot to charity, but it would be, you know, in a case like that, you know, where I know I'm, you know you're actually helping and stuff. And I think that's what Bill Gates does a lot. People don't know about.
When we talk about tax money and how the government uses it, and we talk about, you know, looking at other countries like, you know, like the Scandinavian countries and the socialism that's there, and hey, well, they do it successfully and blah, blah, blah. We've talked about that before in terms of the population. Yeah. But the other thing to me is, okay, but how efficient are their governments? Maybe their governments are actually very well run. And so they're able to do more for their people, even though, yes, their taxes are high, but the people entrust them giving them their tax money because they know it's going to be spent well. and it's going to be spent on them, yeah. and there's not going to be a lot of red tape, and there's not going to be a lot of bureaucracy that's going to, well, you have to have some limit of bureaucracy just to make sure people aren't, you know, taking advantage of the system, even though they, that's the funny thing is, we have all this bureaucracy here. You would think that it would be rock solid in terms of fraud and abuse of the system, yet it happens all the time. And so it's like, you know, how does that reconcile? But that's another subject for another day.
Well, yeah. I think, too, I would like to see it rather than federal government and stuff, a lot of it go to local government because they seem to be more frugal in how they spend stuff than federal government does.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that that drives me crazy, being in local government, working for a city, one of the things that drives me nuts is working with the state and the federal government. It is the worst. Although I will say, when I had to work on a FEMA reimbursement for an incident within my city limits, they developed an online system, and it was actually pretty easy to use. So FEMA seems to have kind of dialed it in terms of working with them. Although it did take a lot longer than I would have liked to get reimbursed once all my paperwork was in, but it had to go flow through the state. So it might not have been FEMA. It was FEMA trying to work with Cal OES and all those. But anyway, the bottom line is it still seemed to work in terms of you know, how their program worked. But there's been a lot of other experiences that I've had working with various federal agencies that have just been very frustrating and difficult. And it's very regimented. There's no personality to it. Whereas I think that local government, we have the ability to be more humanistic. We can actually, you know, we're actually on the front lines with our citizens. The federal government, they never see the people they interact with. Because the federal government actually doesn't have a lot of power to do things. They just have the power of the purse string. So they give a lot of money to other agencies that actually carry out the work. So they don't actually get to see the human aspect of it. Whereas in local government, we do. So I think you're right. I think that local government can be more effective, especially – and when you have – the bigger the city, the more inefficient it gets because you don't have that citizen contact like you do in smaller cities. So like you see like a city of LA, city of Chicago, city of New York – Those are almost like state governments.
Yeah, exactly. And like Buttigieg, you know, I didn't realize South Bend, Indiana is only 100,000 people.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know how many cities around L.A. that are more than 100,000?
But how many of those 100,000?
So I'm thinking maybe Pat Fury should run for president.
The mayor of Torrance, yeah.
Mayor of Torrance, he's over 100,000.
Yeah.
Like about 180,000, isn't it?
No, it's about 140. It's about the same size of the city.
140. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was kind of surprised by that.
Well, and most of those 100,000, a lot of those 100,000 are college students, right? Because I don't know if Notre Dame's actually within the city of South Bend. But.
When you were talking about that, you know, how big they are, like LA, same thing. I think in California, the way the governor is here and stuff, so the way they spend money, it's almost like because this state is so big and so populated, it's almost like the federal government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I think once you get into that high of numbers and money, you know, it's, I don't know, kind of hard to keep track of, I guess. There's complaints about, you know, our governor about wasting money.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's the thing is that when times are good, they can do that because the money's flowing so well that...
Well, you know, and it's between... That's another thing too. It's I don't know how you need a rainy day fund,
mm-hmm.
but it's always determined how much and stuff because they actually have a huge rainy day. Seems like rainy, but the thing is, we have earthquakes and we might need it.
Right.
So you do need that and stuff, but they just do seem to have a big surplus.
Well, and that's the thing too, though, is that remember California lives and dies by its income tax. So because of that. And because we are so, and this is where you run into trouble with relying on the rich. Like some of the, like, you know, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren want to go after is that they want to do not only an income tax, but they want to do a wealth tax. And that's where it becomes very dangerous is, you know, one bad year in the stock market and a lot of that wealth will just be wiped out. Then what do you do? You know, once that wealth's gone, it's gone. You know, you want it. It's almost like you want to tax them during the good times. But then when the bad times, are you going to give them credit back when they lose it all? And so in California, we're so heavily reliant on wealthy. When they do really well, and Silicon Valley's doing well, the money's just flowing in hand over fist. And you can build this. But the reason you have to build that rainy day fund up is because once the economy turns south just even a little bit and that income tax dries up, you either you have to cut programs drastically and start cutting into that rainy day fund. And like you said, we're only one big earthquake away from a lot of that money being used up as well. So it's good in the good times, which is why you do need to be very careful. My boss always says the most important decisions you make is what happens in the good times, not in the bad times. Because it's easy to cut back. Everybody knows when they're bad times. But when the times are good, everybody just wants to spend. And you have to really rein back on that spending. And so the decisions you make during good times are often the toughest because a lot of people go, well, you have the money, so why can't we just do it? And so it's taking that vision and making it so that people realize that, hey, maybe we need to think about this. So, so the impeachment, there's not a lot going on there. There was a hearing this week. They had four legal scholars in front of the Judicial Committee. But the real action is going to happen this coming week. And so tomorrow, they will be kicking off the Judicial Hearing Committee, which could ultimately lead to articles of impeachment. So let's see here.
That's the thing with I think what people are getting sick of, me myself, because I'm retired and can watch a lot of TV, the hearings this week, they're repeating the same things on both sides over and over again. And it's like there's nothing new, and it's just frustrating to hear the same thing. It's like, all right, we've heard that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's like you said, it's happening on – that is happening on
both sides. And they're not even fact witnesses. They're just repeating stuff over and over.
Right.
And it's to me, it just seems like they're just trying a little bit too hard to convince the American people. That's what it's all about. I heard today they're saying, well, why isn't he participating? Because they want him to come. Wasn't Friday he had to participate himself or send somebody?
Well, I do have an article
but
on that.
The thing is he said that. Everybody says, well, it doesn't matter if he participates now or not because they've already got the impeachment stuff written up. You know that they're not going to wait the last minute. It's already written up and ready to go.
Yeah, but so I think, though,
what he says ain't going to change anything at all.
It could.
Or if he sends them.
Here's the thing is that the key witnesses are all in the Trump, close to Trump, even him himself. And so those are, ironically, those are probably the only ones that could make or break the case. Nothing's going to change.
And they're saying is he obstructing Congress by going to the courts. It's always been that way. People want something, you go to court and get it. But they don't want to spend the time to wait for a court.
Well, and that's going to be their mistake.
Just by not doing it, And the thing is that's been our whole – it ain't just two branches of government, three branches of government. It's always been that way. The court decides, whether you can bring a witnesses and stuff like that. So, but they don't want, that. They don't want to wait. So how bad do they want the people that they want? But like I said, I've been watching it, and so far nothing's changed.
Well, here's what they said about – here's an article about the – White House's decision not to participate. The White House on Friday blasted the House impeachment query House's impeachment query as, quote, completely baseless, end of quote, and a, quote, reckless abuse of power, end of quote, ahead of a deadline set by House Democrats for the White House to say whether it would participate in the impeachment proceedings. So White House counsel Pat Cipollone said in a letter, as you know, your impeachment inquiry is completely baseless and has violated basic principles of due process and fundamental fairness. Adopting articles of impeachment would be a reckless abuse of power by House Democrats and would constitute the most unjust, highly partisan, and unconstitutional attempt at impeachment in our nation's history. While the letter doesn't specifically state the White House won't participate, that is what it means, according to a senior administration official. The letter communicates that we will not participate in the process, the official said. Nadler responded to the White House, White House's refusal to participate, saying if the president has no good response to the allegations, then he would not want to appear before the committee. Having declined this opportunity, he cannot claim that the process is unfair. The president's failure will not prevent us from carrying out our solemn constitutional duty. The House passed rules for the impeachment proceedings gave the president's counsel the ability to participate in the Judiciary Hearing Committee hearings. The rules state that the president and his counsel were invited to attend committee presentations of the evidence, which are happening on Monday, as well as ask questions, raise objections, request witnesses, or make a concluding presentation. The American people deserve transparency, Nadler said. If the president thinks the call was perfect and there's nothing to hide, then he would turn over the thousands of pages of documents requested by Congress, allow witnesses to testify instead of blocking testimony with baseless privilege claims, and provide any exculpatory information that refutes the overwhelming evidence of his abuse of power. GOP Representative Doug Collins of Georgia sent Nadler a letter Friday requesting 8 witnesses, including House Intelligence House Intelligence Chairman Adam Schiff, former Vice President Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, the anonymous whistleblower, and anyone the whistleblower relied on to prepare a complaint alleging Trump had solicited election interference from Ukraine. So, like you said, I think barring any testimony from anybody within the administration, whether it's Mick Mulvaney or or Rudy Giuliani or the president himself, nothing's going to change. And I think that this is a calculated thing on whether he has something to hide or not. He knows if the impeachment goes forward and it goes to the Senate, he's not going to be, if no other facts change, and no other facts will change as long as anybody from the White House doesn't come and testifies truthfully, because that'll either make or break the case. And so if nothing changes, he won't be removed from office. So that's why he's refusing to participate. Well, there's no winning for him to do that.
That's true. But it's also, as a layman, which I am, to me it just seems so much like we think you're guilty. We got all this stuff it's like you got to come in and prove you're innocent. And that ain't what, most people have to do. And it's like, if you think I'm guilty, bring all this. I'm not going to do it for you. That's what it seems like to me. It's like, they want him to come in. If he's innocent, come in and prove you're innocent. And that ain't how it should work.
Well, the problem though, is that if you assume that Trump is just trying to basically trump up charges, no pun intended, against Joe Biden just as a political opponent, and if that's what you believe is the case, then the evidence is overwhelming. In terms of, I think that, given the evidence your assumption that's what he did something wrong.
It all stems from this phone call. Although we don't know what's gone on behind the scenes. That would be where they would find out if it's really true. But that's where they were basing all, the whistleblower was basing all his thing on, was this phone call. And nowhere in that phone call at all did he mention. Now he
that
mentioned
we
want to buy missiles
that we know of. Remember, we don't have the entire transcript. This is a memo of the call, so it's a small part of the call. We don't know what all was in the call. That's part of the problem.
Yeah, and he but as far as what they know and what we know, he never mentions at all. Like, I'm withholding money. He mentioned he wanted to buy missiles, and then and that's what I didn't like about the professors there. Because he sat there and says, I want you to do us a favor, though, because we've been through a lot. He's talking about our country. He's not talking about himself. And she twisted around like, well, when he says us, he means me. And that's not true. That's not right at all. You know, like I say, the way they twist so much around. And he mentioned CrowdStrike right after that. It wasn't the Bidens he mentioned. Later on, he mentioned the Bidens. And he wasn't saying investigating Biden. He's going back to 2015 when everybody else was asking, why is he on the board of, you know, with no experience whatsoever? And it's like all countries try to get favor from you. And it's nothing wrong with it, nothing illegal. They're saying, well, he's never done anything wrong. Yeah, but he's on the board getting millions of dollars for favor. That's what they're doing it for. They're not doing it for because he has all this expertise or anything like that. And it's, if Trump was president at the time, and I'm sure they would like to have his son on the board. And then it's like they're saying, they're not going to tell you that we want you on the board to give favor. But that's what it's for. Everybody knows it. I mean, even Biden himself, they said, well, if my name wasn't Biden, they wouldn't have. And it ain't like, you know, $25,000 a year.
But I'm still trying
to. They're giving him millions of dollars.
Then why does he bring up Joe Biden?
He's asking about that. Huh?
Why does he bring up Joe Biden then in the phone call?
Because Joe Biden said that you're not getting $1 billion unless you fire somebody. Now that's a bribe.
But you're making the assumption then that he's trying to get him fired because he's investigating his son.
Well, that's what they say.
Who says
he was?
You sound like Trump now. That's what they say.
No. That's what the thing is. We don't know though. That's why they want to investigate it. Was that? There's no proof one way or the other, or whether that guy was investigating.
Except there was,
and I've heard
they said he wasn't.
Reporter said, "Well,
he had been investigating him for a year."
Reporter said that he was.
Only one reporter, but everyone else at the time knew that he wasn't, and that's part of the reason is that they want him fired because he wasn't investigating corruption like he should have been. That's what everyone at the time said. Everybody, except for people that want to twist this into something that it's not.
But even if that's so, is it not a bribe saying you fire somebody, whether he was doing that or not?
It's leverage.
I mean, there's different ways to go about this leverage. You know, the thing is, and he's leveraged money to get a guy fired in another country.
Right. But if he was doing it to save his son, then that's a problem, right?
Yeah.
So you're just going to give money to a Ukraine who's known for corruption with no strings attached? You're not. But again,
no, you would say that. You would say, "We're not giving you money and stuff because we think that guy's corrupt. We don't sit there and say you fired this guy or you don't get the money."
Well,
you
that's the same. That, what
that's
is
a,
the,
that's
what
a
is,
demand.
Wait. What is the difference between the two things you just said? There's no difference.
What do you mean?
The whole reason that they was making that threat is because of the corruption, and he wasn't fighting corruption, and they wanted to get rid of the corruption. That's why they wanted him fired. So what's the difference between the two things you just said?
No, it's the way you do it, though, from another country and stuff. This guy's all corrupt, and you just say, hey, we think you guys are corrupt, and you're not getting any money. But you don't sit there and say, that one guy, you know, you think if it's corrupt, he's the only corrupt guy in the whole country?
No.
So you fire that one guy, and you get $1 billion.
But he's the one in charge of rooting out corruption. That's his job. And he wasn't doing his job. That's why.
So he should have been doing his job and checking out the Bidens. And maybe that's why, you know, like I said, I even said that a while back that inadvertently he could have been hurting himself and his son. Because he could have fired this guy that's not investigating him. And they bring another guy that will investigate the company he's on. But from other reporters, like I say, we don't know facts and stuff. Like, and another reporter said that guy was investigating the gas company.
Well,
and I don't know. Maybe Biden didn't know that. I'm not saying that he knew it, that he's vice, you know, he just knew that he was corrupt and stuff. But maybe he didn't, you know, maybe he was investigating him and Biden didn't even know that. But it just sounds really bad that you know, you just say, hey, listen, we got $1 billion. Your whole place is corrupt and stuff, and this guy's not doing his job, and we're not going to, you know, give you the money. But you don't tell another company, you know, dictate to fire people. I mean, I'm sure we all do that and stuff with the money and stuff. So then
Trump shouldn't have done it either, then, is what you're saying.
No. What I'm saying is that.
Well, you just said that Biden doing it was wrong.
All people do that, though. No, he was wrong because he demanded a guy be fired before he gives him $1 billion. He could have said, we're not giving you $1 billion till you clean up your corruption. And the same thing, they're saying that.
Well, Trump again.
Leveraged a political thing for political. You need political powers that. That's why he's withholding the money.
So I just want to.
They could do the same thing about China.
I do want to remind you of a little bit of history here on Nixon. So when Nixon was, his tapes were subpoenaed. He gave edited transcripts of the tapes, and basically based on those tapes, it looked like he did the transcripts of those tapes. He did nothing wrong. Once they actually had to release the unedited versions, the complete versions of those tapes, that's where they found out he was actually complicit in the whole thing. This could be the thing is what the whistleblower is complaining about could be based on things that haven't been released to the public because they've been withheld from that phone call.
Yeah.
And how do we know that? We don't know that because the White House refuses to release the entire call. So whose fault is that?
We also don't know. Yeah. That's the thing is there's too many unknowns.
Right. And they're unknowns because the White House refuses to give the information.
But you can't impeach a guy because of unknowns.
So yeah, but they know. But if they know something that they did was bad, and they're withholding it, so I guess that means you can never impeach anybody as long as they just don't. They can only give the information only things that make them look good.
No, well, the thing is the way they twist it. They're twisting Nixon, too much into it. That's the problem. It's he could sit there and tell China, he's going to negotiate a trade deal with him, and he's going to make a really good trade deal. And if he does that, it's going to help him politically, isn't it? Because all of a sudden he's got to get a good trade deal. And look what happened. And you could say that was the political thing, because he knew if he did this good trade deal with China, it helps the country, but it also helps him politically, doesn't it? You know what I'm saying? They can twist everything to be political. And that's the thing is they keep saying, you know, this is a political thing, impeachment.
Yeah, but again, the thing is that if Richard Nixon had never been required to release that tape of him saying that you got to pay the guys that did it, that did the break in, he would have never been impeached. Never.
Well, and the thing is,
because it was based
it
on an unknown.
Down to him impeaching him because of a crime, and they're saying now that, oh well, you don't need a crime to impeach him. Almost every time they had Nixon had a crime.
Well, that's what Lindsey Graham said too. You don't have to have a crime. That's what he said. I mean, yeah, Lindsey Graham set that precedent.
Yeah, but you should have a crime because to be impeached is high crimes and misdemeanors.
Right, but the term misdemeanor,
you have a better chance of it
from
if
it was based to 250 years ago is not how it's defined today, too.
Yeah,
All right.
We talked enough about.
And speaking of a little bit, kind of a thing on that, there was an article this week from Business Insider. There was three doctors, and this is something that has come up before. Now they're talking about the mental fitness of Donald Trump. And, the thing about it is, you know, one side says, well, you know, you can't really do this because, you know, you can't, you know, evaluate somebody's mental health without it, you know, examining them, right?
Yeah.
And, but these three, doctors Brandy Lee, Gerald Post, and John Zinner. Brandy Lee is a Yale psychiatrist. Gerald Post is a former CIA profiler, and John Zinner, a psychiatrist at George Washington University. They wrote a letter or statement for a petition, which was first reported. So over 350 psychiatrists and other mental health professionals are set to submit a petition to Congress on Thursday claiming that President Trump's mental health is rapidly deteriorating amid the impeachment inquiry. What makes Donald Trump so dangerous? This is from their statement. What makes Donald Trump so dangerous is the brittleness of his sense of worth. Any slight or criticism is experienced as a humiliation and degradation. To cope with the resultant hollow and empty feeling, he reacts with what is referred to as narcissistic rage. He is unable to take responsibility for any error, mistake, or failing. His default in that situation is to blame others and to attack the perceived source of his humiliation. These attacks of narcissistic rage can be brutal and destructive. Lee first publicly expressed concerns about Trump's mental health shortly after he took office in January 2017. The move was controversial. Some said it violated the American Psychiatric Association's Goldwater Rule, which states that psychiatrists should not make public statements about the mental health of public figures unless they have personally examined them. Lee told Business Insider that they were not breaking ethical rules for psychiatrists because of a clause in the APA rules obligating psychiatrists to, quote, educate the public when asked about a public figure so that we may improve the community and better public health. She said, quote, whenever the Goldwater Rule is mentioned, we should also refer to the Declaration of Geneva established by the World Medical Association 25 years earlier, which mandates physicians to speak up if there are humanitarian reasons to do so. This declaration was created in response to the experience of Nazism. A recent book by an anonymous Trump administration official claimed that White House staff members were concerned about the president's mental health and its acuity, and said he stumbles, slurs, gets confused, is easily irritated, and has trouble synthesizing information, not occasionally but with regularity. Lee told The Independent that Trump appeared to be doubling and tripling down on his delusions based on his ramping up his conspiracy theories and showing a great deal of cruelty and vindictiveness in his accelerated, repetitive tweets. I believe they fit a pattern of delusions rather than just plain lies. So, again, the whole thing that, so what I've said is from the beginning is because I've read enough into the whole thing with Burisma. I know we just debated on that and I don't think we're going to agree on it, is that I don't believe that when Biden was over there on behalf of Obama, under Obama's orders, and I don't see why Obama would have an interest in Biden's son, especially if it would mean his own political ass was on the line. I don't think he'd put his ass on the line for his vice president's son, to go over there and do whatever you need to do to, root out corruption or whatever. However, which means that it's a conspiracy theory that something was amiss there. So it's either that or Trump was acting out of just politics, pure and simple. So that's where this article comes in. It's like, well, maybe he does believe that there's that kind of thing. And, and here's the thing. They've already come out and said months ago that, yeah, we looked into the Burisma thing. We looked into the Biden thing. And there's nothing there. They said that back in May. So why in July is he asking for them to look into it? Because they had already said 2 months prior that we looked into it and there's nothing nefarious going on, So I don't know. This stuff about his mental health comes up periodically. I don't think it's going to go anywhere, just like it never,
Well, the whole flaw in the whole thing is that if Trump was different when he was younger.
Well, he's always been a narcissist. It's not about
exactly.
It's not about him being senile. He's always been a narcissist. Yeah. You watch The Apprentice, at all, and see the statements he made when he was young.
The same thing about Joe Biden, but he's always kind of been his weird way too.
Well, and also Obama was narcissistic too.
I think like you were talking about before, you almost have to be to run for office and stuff.
Especially that office, yeah.
Yeah, and. A bit like Hillary's narcissist.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And
yeah,
I wish you had a tape of that Joe Biden thing where he's talking about a guy's rubbing his legs when he was in school and he likes kids jumping in his lap. And I mean, the whole thing was completely bizarre.
Yeah, it does sound bizarre.
That was a weird, they had a weird tape of him saying that, yeah, people would rub his legs and then his hair would go back. He had blonde hair. And then I'd like, that goes to a roaches and kids jumping in your laps. And I like kids jumping in my lap. And you're like, what is he talking about? He was just all over that one little thing. If he ever, it's all in one little clip there. It's like, it just sounds completely bizarre. It's kind of like when he was talking about that guy, that gang member that was after him. Remember that?
Yeah.
It was the same kind of bizarre stuff. And I don't think it's Joe getting weird as old age. He's always kind of been.
Well, that's Joe being Joe.
Joe being Joe.
Well, speaking of Joe being Joe. Speaking of Joe being Joe, I'm going to play that exchange between him and a gentleman that is older than him in Iowa this week.
I mean, I don't have, well, I don't have the metal faculty that I did when I was 30 years old. All right, the other,
forget that, I'll answer.
I got a question I want you to answer. We all know Trump has been messing around in Ukraine over there, holding their foreign aid for them to come up saying it was an investigation. We know all about that. And he's no backbone for that. But you, on the other hand, sent your son over there to get a job and work for a gas company that he had no experience in gas, so nothing. In order to get access to the public, for the president. So you're selling access to the president just like he is. So
you're a damn liar, man. That's not true. And no one has ever said that. No one has done that.
I see it on the TV.
You see it on the TV. No, I know you do. And by the way, that's why I'm not sedentary. I don't like it up and no, let them go. Let them go. Look, the reason I'm running is because I've been around a long time and I know more than most people know. And I can get things done. That's why I'm running. And you want to check my shape on it, let's do push-ups together here, man. Let's run. Let's do whatever you want to do. Let's take it on the Number two. No one has said my son has done anything wrong, and I did not on any occasion. And no one has ever said it. Not
I didn't
one.
Say you were doing anything wrong.
You said I set up my son to work in an oil company. Isn't that what you said? Get your words straight, Jack.
That's what I hear on MSNBC.
You don't hear that in MSNBC. You did not hear that at all. What you heard. Look, okay, I'm not going to get in an argument with you, man.
Well, you do, but look,
here's the deal.
It looks like you don't have any more backbone than Trump.
Any other questions?
Yeah, all right. I'm not voting for you.
Well, I knew you weren't, man. You think I thought you'd stand up and vote for me? You're too old to vote for me. All right, here we go. Someone back here. One of the kids in the school.
So he talks about, you know, and that was basically a shot to saying that, hey, you're too old to be running for president. So he's basically just shooting back, hey, you're too old to vote for me, you know.
Yeah. But it was ironic about the whole thing when he said Jack, the guy's name is actually Jack.
Yeah.
I don't think he knew it was Jack, but he was saying, hey, Jack.
No, I think when he first stood up, I think he said, my name's Jack before they started recording. I think that part got edited out probably. So he probably did say, hey, my name's Jack. I'm 83 years old, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that he's definitely.
Well, you know, the whole thing about his son and stuff, like you said, nobody's proved his son did anything wrong, which is true. And that's not what most people are saying. They're saying, you know, Ukraine's being corrupt. They're trying to corrupt. That's part of their corruption. They're hiring people like that for influence. Not that it's what the people he's hiring is doing anything wrong, but they're trying to get influence because he was the guy that Trump put in charge of. So he hired his son and stuff. And it does sound, even way back in 2015, they said it sounds nefarious. And that why is he hiring his son? Not that his son did anything wrong, and not that even Joe did anything wrong. it's Ukrainians that are trying to corrupt it, you know, like do this stuff, just like them when they hired John Kerry's, you know, stepson and Romney's son.
So then why did
for influence?
Yeah, but then why? I mean, then why is he asking them to look into Joe Biden, Hunter Biden specifically during that call?
Because he heard, like, what everybody, like you say, you know, how Trump always hears stuff. He hears that what Trump heard, whether it's true or not, I'm sure Trump did hear that this guy was investigating the gas company, and that's why he wanted him fired, because his son worked for the gas company. I think he really believes that, and he wants to investigate to see if that's true.
Yeah.
It might not be true. Like you said, they said that that wasn't the case, but that's what I really think he believes. Because you know how you've heard him, Trump, plenty of times saying, well, I heard this and I heard that.
Yeah, but you know, because part of the thing was, at least on other things that have been said by Giuliani to other people, is like, look, we don't actually want an investigation. We just want you to say you're doing an investigation. Now, if you're just asking them to say that you're doing an investigation, the whole purpose of that is just to make Joe Biden look bad, right?
Right.
That means you don't care what comes out of it. You just want him to look bad. And if that is the case, then that changes things, doesn't it?
Yeah. But the whole premise of all this stuff, though, is like is the president he was talking to. And if you're the victim of a bribe, and you're a victim of quid pro, if you don't know it, is it really a bribe and quid pro quo? If you don't know you're the victim of it all, I mean, the victim of it should feel like pressured, which he
even
said he felt
even,
no pressure
even if he,
whatsoever.
Even if he was, he would never say he was, because he needs to stay in Trump's good graces. He would never say that.
But when you listen to the call, the way the whole call went, you know, like we were talking earlier, Trump's focus was on that stuff and CrowdStrike. And like I said, right after, and nobody at all mentioned it wasn't like he said, I want you to get dirt on him and I want lots of it.
Yeah.
Like what Adam Schiff said. Now, why would he say that, you know, do a parody of the call if nothing like that was on it? It just made him look bad.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think the parody of the call was bad. But here's the thing again. If the whistleblower brought information that his complaint was based on the totality of the call, you know, 2/3 of which we don't even know about, because I think we can surmise that we know about 10 minutes of the 30-minute call at most.
But when you look at the way I'm looking at it too, is like if you're trying to get somebody to do something like that and some kind of bribe, what they're saying is a bribery. They're saying it's quid pro quo. They keep saying that still now, bribery and that. Mm-hmm. And if the other guy doesn't know you're withholding nothing, if the other guy doesn't know and part of it, what they never play too, is he says, I'd like you to do that, you know, if that's possible. Does that sound like a threat? And he's like saying, if that's possible, if it's not, then you can't do it.
Well, again,
that's what he said at the very end of one of the sentences. He said that, yeah, I'd like you to look into that if that's possible.
Well, again, I think that there's stuff missing from the call. Yeah. The Ukrainian president has no incentive to go out there and say, oh, yeah, I absolutely felt pressured, because he knows Trump is still president. And
even if he
did feel pressured, he's never going to say he actually was. He's going to say, yeah, it was fine. I never felt that way. Because he knows that he needs to stay in Trump's good graces. He knows that. Because
after Trump's the president. But like I said, a lot of this, they twist and stuff. Because, you know, it's easy to do, too. Like I said, you can twist anything. Like I said, that they could really twist it. Like, oh, he wants to help himself politically, like I said earlier, with China. You know, the only reason he wants a good trade deal is because it's going to make him look good politically.
Right.
You know, you can twist anything, really. And they don't have enough. Like I said, no side. And Nancy Pelosi said for impeachment, that's what they said during what Adler said during when Clinton was being, you need more bipartisan, you need more, you know, facts on stuff. For impeachment and stuff. And she said the same thing the only bipartisan has been more Democrats didn't vote for it than all the Republicans didn't vote for the article impeachment. It's just, you know, for the vote on it. It was just the only bipartisanship was against it. Because it was two of them. Even though it was two, it's still, that's a bipartisan.
Right.
The Democrats didn't go along with it. And it's not going to change in the Senate. And I think that that's true, that you do need more of a bipartisan for an impeachment, just like they did with, well, they couldn't, like I said, with Clinton. They obviously, he perjured himself. If you look at it in that standpoint, yes. If you look at it like, oh, he's having an affair, it's all about affair. Does it hurt the country? Are you hurting the country? You know, like I said, the people and the country, which if Trump did was all true, then it does hurt your, you know, it's different. It does hurt the country. Private affair with somebody doesn't hurt the country.
Well, and
what he did would hurt the country.
Well, and I think that I've always believed from the very beginning that the Mueller report, I think, was because it was very hard to understand. A lot of people can't, it's beyond people's comprehension in terms of what actually was going on in the timeline of things. And, you know, him firing Sessions and firing Comey at the time that they did, because they, you know, it was kind of like, you know, Nixon's Saturday Night Massacre to me in a way, and, you know, just drawn out more, that, you know, he asked people to fire Mueller and do all these things to obstruct the investigation rather than just letting it, you know, while in public saying, yeah, I just wanted to play its course. But in private, he was, you know, to me, that's clear obstruction of justice. And I think that if we're going to say that Clinton committed obstruction of justice, I think he did too. But I think that because it was very hard to understand, and because Mueller really didn't even really, you know, his name was on the report. That's about it. I don't think he knew, understood what was in the report. And because he did such a poor job in his testimony, that everyone just kind of dismissed it. But if you actually read the report, well, there was a lot there. And that's where I have, I think there's more to that than the Ukraine thing.
But the whole report, Mueller report started, and you can find other stuff, but the whole thing started with Russian collusion. They colluded with Russia. Mm-hmm. And the report said they didn't collude with it. Maybe
they couldn't conclude if they did or not. They couldn't conclude whether they did or not. Although, again, I think that the Roger Stone stuff actually makes it look like it did.
But like a prosecutor, it's kind of, but with a prosecutor, you never sit there and say, well, we can't prove that he didn't do anything. You know, they just either indict him or they don't.
Yeah.
They don't sit there and say, well, we couldn't. So that kind of looked bad too, I thought. But
All right. Well,
but Nixon was bipartisan.
Yeah.
Well, they all said that they were going to, and that's why he stepped down.
Once the smoking gun tape came out, it wasn't up until that point. Up until that point, it was down partisan lines.
Like you say, maybe there might be a smoking gun that comes out of this. So far, there's not. There's no blue dress. There's no stain.
Right. So that's
what a guy said earlier today.
That's what it's going to take. That's honestly what it's going to take.
There's no like with Nixon, there's no thing with Clinton, like there was a blue dress or anything like that. So that, like I said, they haven't got it yet.
Yeah.
So that's why it hasn't changed. If they get it, things will change.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's the only thing that's going to change people's minds at this point. So anyway, let's move on to our next segment.
Previously on Survivor.
So this week, another interesting tribal council, right? Wouldn't you say?
I've never seen one like that where I've seen them whispering before in tribal council, but I've never seen one where pretty much that's all they did during the whole tribal council and then went to vote.
Right. They basically, you know, went off
the host, what's his name? Jeff?
Jeff Probst.
He usually has a lot of going on, and then you whisper a little bit, but it seemed like the whole tribal council was just whispering back and forth. And then they said, well, are you guys ready to vote? After they did all that whispering, they didn't really discuss a lot.
Right.
Like they normally do.
Yeah.
Which was kind of weird. And I was kind of lost in it all with all that whispering, like, what's going on?
Yeah, I know. It was quite interesting because, you know, they at the end of the day, after all, okay. So going into it, leading up to it, it seemed like there was a 4-4 split, right? Nora was with the quote unquote misfits, I guess, the people that didn't go on the loved one's trip, right?
Because she realized she's at the bottom of the heap.
Right. So she goes on all that, and then at Tribal, she throws the other people right under the bus.
I know. That's what I didn't get.
Now she's on the bottom of everybody. And at the end of the day, I don't understand how after all of that conversation, after all that happened, at the end of the day, they just get rid of Krishma. Well, that was like the most anticlimactic thing that could have happened.
Yeah.
After all of that.
The only part about the whole thing of that, though, is that I'm glad she's gone because she just annoyed me. She was just so annoying the way she was and stuff. But I can't believe how, like, Nora, how she, before this, she was kind of like on everybody's radar.
Right.
Now she's on both sides of radar.
Yeah, I don't know how they trust her going forward. I don't see. Even if she tried to talk him into, getting rid of Karishma, all right, we got to get rid of Karishma. I don't see how she's not next unless she wins immunity. Either she finds an idol.
Because
Elaine played the idol, so there'll be an idol back out there. So she better be searching for that thing nonstop because that's going to be probably her only way.
I'm surprised she played it for herself. I don't know why she thought she would be getting votes. But maybe all that whispering.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell because you can only get bits and pieces of it.
You can't really blame anybody that plays an idol, though.
Right.
How many times, she should had two idols in her pocket and got voted out.
Yeah, after that. Well, they didn't know that, though.
That I could never... but I don't understand at all and stuff. You play one idol, you have one in your pocket still. Like I said, I just didn't get that one at all and stuff. And you can't ever blame anybody whether they get a vote or not. Just like, you play an idol, you don't get any votes. Because as soon as you think you don't need it, that's when you need it.
Right,
haven't
exactly.
Haven't they learned that by now?
Yeah, exactly.
That's one thing that seems like they would learn by now. If you feel real comfortable, that's the time to play it.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap the show up because we've gone over an hour. So,
okay.
Told that
I wanted to.
What's that?
Mention one thing about Kaepernick. Okay. Is that he, there was a signing that came out of all this that he did. Did you know that?
I did not know that. Hold on.
One of the receivers.
Yeah.
One of the receivers he brought to catches for his workout got signed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I did hear about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of interesting.
So maybe they figured, he got some,
Well, he brought some professional guys to catch for him.
Right. Well, you hope so. I mean, you need them to make you look good.
So. Exactly. You don't want guys out there like me dropping balls every time. Right in my lap.
Right, yeah. So, that'll do it for us. False finish. Remember to visit our website at themoderatepodcast.com. We are on Twitter at themodpodcast1 and on Facebook at facebook.com/themoderatepodcast. So, for my dad, I am Jimmy Davis. Until next week, keep it real.